From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in early 2011 with an announcement on the website for the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra. The SSO had filed for bankruptcy. The announcement on the website said, quote, "The SSO is unable to issue refunds for any tickets because we have run out of money," end quote. And so ended a 50-year run for the SSO. At that moment, it might have been easy to assume that this was a canary in the orchestral coal mine. Budgets were tight. Syracuse was hardly alone in facing its future. But as the New York Times recently noted, it turned out that the SSO was an outlier in upstate New York. The Times writing, quote, "Even after that minor key finale, upstate New York remains a part of the world unusually rich in orchestras," end quote. And it might be easy to assume that we're focusing solely on orchestras like the RPO, which receives and deserves great attention. But go beyond the RPO. You'll find orchestras in various communities. Penfield, Greece, the Finger Lakes, we could go on. And even for Syracuse, you certainly can't say their community doesn't want an orchestra. The Times story failed to examine the changing business model for some orchestras, which has risen in the SSO's place. The truth is we haven't explored the efforts really beyond the RPO enough on this program, and that changes this hour. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests. David Harmon is the music director for the Penfield Symphony Orchestra. David, welcome to the program.
Great to see you, Evan.
Dan Griswold is president of the PSO. Dan, welcome.
Thank you.
President and what?
A member of the viola section.
Okay, yes. Yes, I didn't want to sell you short there. Yeah. As well, so thank you for being here.
Shades violas are used to it.
Shade Zajac is here, music director and conductor for the Genesee Symphony Orchestra and a guest conductor for the Finger Lakes Symphony Orchestra. Shade, welcome to
you. Thank you so much for having me.
And Jonathan Allentoff is the founding music director of the Brockport Symphony Orchestra, music director of the Greece Community Orchestra, and associate conductor and principal arranger for the Brighton Symphony Orchestra. Is that all?
Well, that's very kind. Thank you, and wonderful to be on your program.
Okay, well, it's great to have you, Jonathan. Thank you very much here. Well, as I said at the outset here, there's so much going on, and I want our listeners to know, this is still even just a sampling. I mean, this doesn't cover all of it, but there is a lot happening, and David, I'll start with you. It's big night for PSO. What's going on for you guys?
We have a concert at 7:30 at Penfield High School, and it's very exciting. It's the first one of our 61st season of the orchestra, and that's going to feature Mark Kellogg playing trombone in this very interesting concerto by a man named Primeru. There's a Prokofiev Classical Symphony, and the big piece on the program is the Tchaikovsky Pathétique, the Symphony No. 6. So that's tickets can be available at the door this evening.
All right, tickets at the door this evening, and again, that's where?
That's at Penfield High School, 7:30.
And how many performances like this are we getting annually, David?
Like that? Well, from the Penfield Symphony, you get four.
Okay.
From other orchestras around the area, you have a, well, I also conducted the University of Rochester. We do give four symphony orchestra concerts and four chamber orchestra concerts. Those are all free to the public. And the myriad of other groups that go on, there's a huge, as you pointed out, a huge amount of wonderful music going on in this community.
And one part of the challenge is simply making sure the community is aware of the options that they have, and we're going to be talking about that. I also wonder, David, if you feel that, you know, obviously, I know you don't feel that the market is saturated, but how do you feel about the sort of the level and the number of orchestra and performance that's out there?
You know, if you think about the greater Rochester area and the fact that we have WXXI FM, that is something that really tells a lot about what the community can support. And obviously, there's a huge amount of interest. The base of the Eastman School of Music and the rich heritage that's provided for the entire community for so many years, you know, it's sort of a breeder reactor for classical music in this whole area. So these orchestras that I'm fortunate enough to interact with, like Penfield, are populated by people of a really high musical skill level. These people can play very, very well, and yet some of them are medical doctors, some of them are realtors, a lot of them are music teachers, and they come together to make music happen, and that's the case with all these other orchestras in the area, too. It's a huge population of talented, dedicated musicians who are willing to share, and also people who are interested in hearing the music. So that variety of opportunity is really tremendous here.
Well, let me ask Dan Griswold then. When you go into the phone booth and change into the viola performer that you are, you know, before you do that, what are you doing on a daily basis then?
I'm the pastor of a church.
See, look at the diversity and the kinds of performers that we have there. Yeah. And did you grow up playing music?
Yeah, I've been playing for probably 45 years.
Mm-hmm. And how did you end up in Penfield with the PSO?
Well, I ended up in the Rochester area just to call to this church that I'm serving. And then after a few years of learning more about what musical options were around, and devoting more time of my personal time to practice, I learned about the Penfield Symphony through its through a former president, through Gene, mm-hmm. And some other music teachers in the area. My sons were taking Suzuki lessons at the time in cello and viola, and looked into it and showed up, and there I've stayed.
And we're glad about that.
And how many performers in PSO?
It can be from 80 to over 90, mm-hmm.
okay,
depending on what we need. But there, it's a large orchestra, mm-hmm. very large orchestra.
And does your role as president mean that you also have to deal with some of the money and budget side of things?
Yes, it does.
Is that just as much fun as I imagine it is?
It probably. I should say, though, that I'm new as president.
Okay.
I succeed a very capable president who served for 5 years, mm-hmm. who is our second oboist, mm-hmm. Carolyn Laun. And so I'm filling very, very big shoes.
Tell me about the challenge, then, that kind of work entails here. We opened with, well, let me actually step back and then just ask you. When SSO files for bankruptcy, as an example, does the orchestral community take that as a moment to sort of a moment of concern? Do you view that as an outlier? Do you think, you know, what's the lesson here? What's our own business model? What's that moment do for you?
Well, I think that Dave needs to weigh on this more than I do, but for myself, I see the Penfield Symphony as being a very different model, because mm-hmm. we have only two paid musicians in the orchestra, our music director and our concert master. And so we're not needing, our costs are lower for that, because of that. We are not laying out large, as a matter of the budget, mm-hmm. We're not paying a lot of musicians very little. I know that professional musicians struggle, and none of us are serving, except for the concertmaster and the music director, none of us are serving for pay. Mm-hmm. We are truly amateurs. We are doing it simply for the love of the music, and we are not getting financial compensation for it. So that reduces that side of the balance sheet. We don't have to worry about that part.
Mm-hmm. How so common is that? I mean, I would ask Shade and Jonathan just kind of weigh in on how common that model is.
I mean, for a community orchestra, it's pretty standard. Okay. The concertmaster usually gets paid because he or she has a lot of mm-hmm. obligations, so to speak, and the conductor gets paid. Thank you. but I'm actually in a very interesting position with the Genesee Symphony. Is again made up of, you know, farmers and doctors and you name it, they're all there, and some students in college still, some just out of college, and we're very lucky to. I mean, we are able to pay the musicians a very, you know, gas money, basically. And again, they don't do it for the money. They do it because they want to pay, or they want to play. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And so, but again, it's very, I think it's not very typical, I think. And there are some orchestras, I think, that you actually have to pay dues to be in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that, yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, it's very true what David and Shade and Dan are saying. In our case, I conduct a number of different orchestras, and I also work on the administration side. In Brighton Symphony's case, we do have dues, and everyone pitches in. Our wonderful concertmaster, Lisa Toth, is paid. Our music director, Rick Jones, is paid. I am paid, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. When it comes to the Greece Symphony Orchestra, we do not have a paid concertmaster. Obviously, that's conducted by David Fettler. He also conducts the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, but that does have all paid players, so there's a difference. When it comes to Greece Community Orchestra, no one is paid other than the conductor. And as far as Brockport Symphony goes, even the administrative and artistic staff volunteer much of their time and services. But I should mention the in-kind support is something that funds a lot of community orchestras. Mm-hmm. And without it, I think we'd be in a very different situation.
Absolutely.
Is everyone at the table, at least whatever parts of our community you're representing, are things as stable as sort of as you would hope right now? Shade, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, this is my first year as conductor of the Genesee Symphony. I'm incredibly lucky and honored, and they're wonderful. We just had our first concert on Sunday. And this is the start of their 70th season, which is incredible. But I would say, yes, things are, you know, quite stable. We just had a very sizable donation made by a woman who passed away, and we have named the concertmaster chair in her memory. Mm-hmm. And she was a gym teacher, and she left money to a ton of organizations. I can't even begin to list you some of them because I don't remember, and because there are a lot. So I think, you know, we're very lucky, and very lucky.
It's probably a good time to remind you, you can put WXXI in your will if you like. but, you know, but very seriously, Jonathan, I think that, yes, as you mentioned, those are the kinds of moments and the support and the people who see the impact on a community that can make it sustainable, right?
Absolutely. And this is where we really have to be grateful for our Rochester community. You know, I do a lot of traveling, and, you know, I was born in this wonderful, wonderful city. And, you know, when I travel, I see orchestras and musical institutions, and I see a lot of talented people. But what I see in Rochester are people dedicated to a community cause, people that will take the extra step to come out on a Sunday night for a rehearsal, people that take the extra step to pitch in music. You see religious institutions in Rochester, churches like Temple, if you go to churches and temples, Temple Bethel, Temple Beth Kodesh, Bethany Presbyterian Church, St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Clover Center, it goes on and on. And these institutions, many of them donate their space or they give us reduced cost space. And the players, you got to remember, everyone's volunteering their time. They come out after work. And I love it because people tell me it makes their lives. It makes every week, they say it's the highlight of their whole week. I think that's true whether it's any of my orchestras or David's orchestras or Shades. I think it's a universal theme.
Dan, do you feel that way?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, both Dave and I feel very strongly that the people who are coming out to play are giving up a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not cost free for them, but we know that they're getting a lot out of it. And so one of the great things to recognize and we try to highlight is how beautiful this experience is of playing great music together so well.
It's magic in so many ways, both in terms of that particular personal exchange that happens and the music that results from it, because it comes from a very sincere giving place, you know, from the player's point of view. And I think that helps us sustain audiences as well. Our audience, I think, if I'm remembering the figures correctly, has not dipped much at all. In fact, it's going up a little bit by bit, which helps the bottom line. I mean, we still, as you mentioned before, have to pay people like me and our wonderful concertmaster, Bill Hunt, who's also in the first violin section of the Rochester Philharmonic, just fabulous player. And we have a little bit of overhead ourselves. There's a printing of various things. There's tickets, there's promotion, there's actually paying for the hall because we don't get that free from the Penfield High School.
Yeah. If I could ask Dan, you know, just as an example of your own sort of playing performance career, you picked up an instrument at what point in your life? How young were you when you picked it up?
Seven or eight. Third grade.
Okay.
One of the great things about New York schools is a lot of them have string programs that begin in early elementary. Not all school districts do, but it's pretty common throughout New York State, and I've lived in other states, and I know this isn't universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so as you got older, did you lose touch with it at any point?
When I was in graduate school, it was hard to keep it up. For a good 10 years, I was playing it intensively for about one period of the year, once a year, as I would try to get ready to do something, say, for church or whatever. And I wasn't in an ensemble for a good long time. And so it's hard to keep up an instrument when you're not. This is one of the advantages of all these groups.
Yeah.
And they draw good players is because people want to keep up their skills. And it's very difficult to keep up your skills when you're playing only by your lonesome.
Sure. And I think this is kind of what I'm driving at here is because I think it would be an easy mistake for the audience to make to assume that, well, these are largely unpaid. The performance quality is, you know, sort of somewhat lesser or amateur. I mean, it really is remarkable. And I wonder for you, when you sit among your peers, especially when you were, you know, kind of doing this for the first time, is there pressure knowing that how good, I mean, just how the raw talent that's on display, is there pressure?
Sure. I see this all the time. It shows up, say, when my stand partner is the principal for the viola section, she can't be there because she's ill or she's traveling or something for work or whatever. And so I move into her slot, and nobody wants to come sit next to me because they're afraid of this guy here in front of me. No, but there's still a recognition, especially new players. When they come in, they go, oh, my word, this is really something. And we've had players who have joined and then have exited the orchestra because they believe, perhaps rightly, that they do not have what it takes to keep up.
In our particular case, the orchestra has gone to an audition format. So we don't just accept anyone who would like to play with us. We actually have auditions and a substitute waiting list as well now.
Okay. Well, yeah. And same for Shade. Jonathan, how do you sort of derive your members here?
Well, a lot of when I came, so again, I'm quite new at this position. I think...
Where were you before, by the way?
In school.
But where in school?
I was at Nazareth College right here. And then last year I did my my trial concert with GSO, mm-hmm. and then I was lucky enough to go to Chicago to work with a couple groups and did some master classes in Baltimore and around and driving all over the place. So this is my first year, and really, from what I can, you know, if you at the moment, if you want to play in the group, you know, we let you play, and it's not necessarily an audition. We just what it has been in the past, from my understanding, is the conductor or the concertmaster, someone listens to you so they can, you know, put you in a place that would best suit you, not
sometimes
stress you
out. Sometimes another room with a door locked.
Well,
for the most part, not though.
No.
Okay. We're I imagine, Shade, very seriously, the people who choose to come out to begin with are those who've got skills and a desire to continue to play well.
Yeah, this group is a really, and I'm not trying to get the job anymore, so I, you know,
you can put it out there. That's right.
They're a really wonderful group, and they're serious about playing music. And to kind of extend on what these fine gentlemen we're saying, in a community orchestra, you have people who, you know, are not professional musicians, so they're not playing this repertoire on a regular basis. And, you know, for me, playing in, you know, different orchestras around, subbing and being a ringer, there are certain pieces, as we were talking in the lobby downstairs, that kind of go on your list. You go, oh, I have to play this again. And that sometimes can lead to a really...
What's an example?
Oh, I won't.
Sleigh Ride.
Oh.
That's done every Christmas concert, almost every Christmas concert.
There's actually a law that says it must be.
Yeah, it must be. Must be. That was one of my...
But are there other orchestral... Like, what comes to mind for me is like the ninth, you know, Beethoven's ninth, like things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, no.
Okay.
I mean...
You're talking about more of the...
Well, I mean, like Danse Macabre is kind of on my list. I don't really... for whatever reason, it's just never been one of my favorite pieces.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Some people, it's Ravel's Bolero. They just, they can't stand it. I love that piece for whatever, well, it was, I have my own reasons, but, and it's a wonderful piece. So therefore, you know, these musicians, they play these pieces that they may never have played before and may never play again in their lives.
Yes.
And that really creates a special thing. And not saying that those, you know, who play these pieces over and over again do not produce a really electrifying performance. Of course they do. But sometimes, obviously, it can get stale if you're playing this, you know, over and over again. So we're in a really wonderful position where we can make such wonderful music and such passionate music, and they're really into it. So when they come, you know, when they come to rehearsal, they want to be rehearsal. And you know, they say, or if they can't make it, you can see they're really... You know, oh, I'm away for this concert, and they're really upset about it, or they have post-concert depression when it's over.
Jonathan, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, thanks. You know, Shade, I so admire and love what you said, because
you.
I think that's the heart of community music. And I know whether it be Brighton Symphony or one of the Greece orchestras or Rockport Symphony, it's truly a family. And, you know, I was conducting an Americana concert, and as Shade said, we can do a lot of music, such as General Mix-Up USA, my great mentor, Dr. Bill Hulfish, restored from the manuscript. You're not going to see that on a lot of the just standard professional concerts. We have the opportunity to program a wide variety of repertoire and to do innovative things that excite people. I couldn't agree more. The energy of the performances are amazing. And in terms of Brighton's and Rockport's and Greece's case, you have so many people volunteering their time. And it's been interesting to see a tremendous growth and to see an audience enthusiasm. And as these wonderful gentlemen have been saying, every orchestra has its niche, and that is what makes Rochester such a wonderful community.
Well, I am very curious to know how they choose programming and what the influences are and how they alight upon these decisions here. Because if you're just joining us, as we mentioned earlier, Penfield has a concert tonight, Penfield Symphony Orchestra. And David, one more time, the details on that?
Details are really exciting. Prokofiev Classical Symphony, Premru, Concerto for Trombone and Orchestra with Mark Kellogg, who's principal trombonist of the RPO, and Tchaikovsky Symphony Number 6, and that's at 7:30 p.m. at Penfield High School. Tickets at the door.
All right. Well, in a moment, I kind of want to dig into how these programming choices are made, but I do want to grab a phone call, and I'll let listeners know if you want to weigh in, or maybe you're someone who we've got people say, oh, you know, I perform, or if you want to share your experience, questions or comments, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're right here in Rochester, 263-9994. Ken in Rochester. Go ahead, Ken.
Good afternoon. I'd like to broaden the palette here a little bit with a brush, if I may, in that we not only have wonderful orchestral music with the various local symphonies that we have around town, but Rochester as a whole has one of the most active and vibrant music communities going on. From the jazz level, from the pop level, from the rock level, for the clubs and venues that we have, that there are so many people that are engaged at so many different levels that it's really a wonderful microcosm of activity that we've got going on here. And it is unique. It's not something that we see in all of the upstate areas. We've noticed a huge difference between the Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse areas, the downstate areas. And it's wonderful that we have folks engaged at so many levels. So many of us, so many of the folks and friends, even for zero pay, that are going out there and willing to participate, willing to throw up new ideas and take a chance on different ideas to get others engaged. And it happens at so many different levels here in Rochester.
Well, Ken, thank you for that. And that recalls for me a conversation I had. In fact, a speech I saw given by Glenn Kellogg this past Friday night. I was out at the German House for the Open Letter Books annual celebration. And Glenn Kellogg, who is not only the president of Hart's Local Grocers, but he's an urban economist who's been around the country. So he's not someone who's been in Rochester for decades. He came here a few years ago, and his observation on the art scene was absolutely undersold to the wider public just how great the art scene is, but often sort of siloed. This is going on and you've got your head down over here doing this amazing thing, but because your head is down and you're working so hard, does the broader community know about it and what's happening over here and what's happening over here? And one of his goals is to sort of see more connectivity. So on that scale, I occasionally hear about things like side-by-side programs or working with the RPO, those kind of things. And that's not to say that every orchestra must work with the RPO to be sort of great or legitimate, but I'm curious to know, David, I'll start mm-hmm. with you on this. Does Penfield, for example, perform with or work with other groups or kind of get outside of that silo?
Occasionally in the past we've had some guests, high school students usually, but we also, for instance, have a concerto competition for high school players every year that's funded by a very generous gift from the Joe Amish family. And that sort of thing goes a long way to connecting with the community too. It's important for us to recognize the fact that, as Ken was saying, there's a huge amount of mm-hmm. wonderful music being made. I was thinking about what I think was Ellington said one time, it doesn't matter what the style is as long as it's good music. and that's really pretty important sort of thing. So, for instance, on our next concert with the Penfield Symphony, Tony Caramillo, who's a professor of jazz piano at Eastman, is going to be playing a Chick Corea piano concerto. So that sort of thing helps to broaden and not only our own players' experience, but also the audience's too.
Let me ask Jonathan Allentoff, founding music director of the Brockport Symphony Orchestra, music director of the Greece Community Orchestra, and associate conductor and principal arranger for the Brighton Symphony Orchestra, to weigh in on that, whether it's these side-by-side programs or others.
I think the side-by-side program is fabulous. All of my orchestras have had players participate in those. But I have to admit, I love community ensembles collaborating with one another. Mm-hmm. With Brockport Symphony, we collaborate with the Amadeus Chorale. wonderful K-12 choir under the direction of Darla Bear. We're going to collaborate this year for the first time with the Spencerport Community Chorus. We collaborate with local soloists from Mary Wojciechowski on vocals. Brighton Symphony Orchestra is doing a harp concerto with Joanna Jin, wonderful high school harp performer. When it comes to this coming Sunday's performance with the Greece Symphony, Aniango Yarbo Davenport is coming in from Bogota, Colombia, to perform with the Greece Symphony. I mean, this is where we really start to see energy, whether it be the Greece Community Orchestra and the IACC Choir, or bringing in local soloists or homegrown soloists from our orchestras. If we collaborate, we can give people a totally new experience. We can get interdisciplinary collaboration. I wrote a new film score for our Christmas concert. We're going to have Sid Rosenzweig, film professor, introduced. We've had dancers. We've had multimedia displays. There's nothing that we can't do. And what makes it so exciting for all of us in this room is that we're constantly innovating and looking at new things that maybe you haven't seen if you've gone to the RPO as much or one of the other professional orchestras or bands. And we play all different kinds of music. Symphonic masterpieces, yes, but also popular music, folk music, film score restorations, music, basically anything you can sing, you can find in the orchestra. Thank you.
Shade?
Yeah, we at the GSO, we have a concerto competition. We had three winners this year, which is usually they have one or two. And two of them performed on our first concert last Sunday. Incredible musicians, one from Rochester, Jackie Hager, who's a student of Kathy Kemp, who is the assistant principal cellist of the RPO. Incredible lady and incredible student. Played the Lalo Concerto way better than I did at her age. So we have the concerto competition, and we also have this thing called String Workshop, where we bus local string students from surrounding high schools in Batavia and beyond, and they come and rehearse with whoever the principal conductor is, and then they come to the dress rehearsal and play a piece or two in with the orchestra. And I think that's such an incredible experience because growing up, my school didn't have a string program. So I had to go to, I'm from Ovid, New York. So I went to Ithaca College and ITE for cello lessons. So I didn't get to play in a real symphonic orchestra until I came to college. And of course, I fell in love with it. So to be able to give this experience to young musicians is really incredible and something I'm very proud of. I know in the past they have collaborated with different choirs in the area, and that's something that I would, of course, love to continue.
Let me grab Alan in Fairport, who wants to join the conversation. Go ahead, Alan.
Hello there. Greetings to all. I just wanted to mention that local community orchestras are a wonderful outlet for those folks like me who are musicians at heart but chose to enter other professions. So it gives us a wonderful outlet to play high quality music. People often confuse Penfield Symphony with the Rochester Philharmonic because we play very similar repertoire. So it's a terrific opportunity for amateur musicians of a high level to have real, I shouldn't say real careers, have alternative careers and yet enjoy performing music too.
Well, Alan, thank you, and it's wonderful to hear that these organizations are giving that outlet to you, and so I appreciate the phone call. There are big smiles on a couple of the gentlemen's face here. Go ahead, guys.
Alan's our associate concertmaster. So. Truth in advertising.
My chief job is to turn the pages for the concertmaster.
I feel like you may be underselling it slightly, Alan.
Just a bit.
I'm also concertmaster of Greece Symphony, so that's a wonderful outlet, too.
And I should mention, Alan is so wonderful and has played with me in so many concerts. We're actually playing together at Greece Symphony's concert. I'm principal viol and Alan's concert master. He's played with me at Hochstein all over Rochester. And what Alan contributes to community music is he is one of the finest people in all of our orchestras. And we are so grateful to you, Alan, for everything that you bring to us.
Hear, hear.
I'm humbled and proud of it.
Well, thank you, Alan. Thanks for joining the conversation. That's just an example of the many people in our own community who you might not know, as I mentioned earlier. You know, get out of work, go into the phone booth, come out with that that big S on their chest, and go to S is for symphony, not Superman. That's where they go. And how much time out of your week or month or year would you say?
Oh, that's hard to guess. It partly depends on the repertoire and the program that we've got going on. What was it, the Rachmaninoff that we did a few years ago?
The Second Symphony.
Yeah. I think I must have put in 20 hours of practice before we had our first rehearsal because it was so difficult and required so much prep. And, you know, the realities of life, taking on the president's position has meant that I don't have as much time to give to practicing. And other people have similar things that come up in their lives that mean that they may not be able to do as much as they want, but you still got to carve out the time for it. And what I find is that when I do, I feel so much better, not just because I'm prepared, but because simply playing is a joy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're late for our only break. And so when we come back here, we're going to talk about a number of subjects, not the least of which is, you know, whether our panelists are seeing a change at all in preference of the audience. You know, you think about the fact that Penfield's been around for
61 years.
61 years. How long for the orchestras you work with?
Brighton, over 40 years. Okay. Over 40 years for the Grease orchestras. Brockport has a legacy back to 1920s, but the modern version I started in 2010.
Okay. And Shane?
And we're in our 70th season.
Okay. So what you're seeing is longevity and success over the decades, but here in 2016, if they are all going to continue to perform for our communities, for all of our community, I mean, it's not, Penfield doesn't just play for Penfield. That's actually, it's important to point that out here.
Right.
If you live in Greece, you can actually go tonight. They will let you in if you have a passport. The question becomes then, how do you continue to make sure that the audience knows you're there, is coming out to see you, and are sort of our viewing and listening habits changing? Every 18 months or so, we see a new piece on the death of classical music or the death. David just about hung his head when I said that. And I know you've seen those pieces, and they're usually overwrought. But I guess the question is, you know, with music on demand so much more available than it was even 10 years ago, does the audience have a different habit or demand? And I'm curious to know if they have found that to be true at all. So we're going to hit that. We'll talk about how they make their programming choices. Do they work with one another? I mean, do they ever look at each other and say, really, that Schubert? You're doing that Schubert? We're doing that Schubert as well. If you want a chance to see them perform, we mentioned Penfield tonight, but we'll make sure that you've got a chance to know how to go out and see these community orchestras performing. So that's all coming up after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections. First hour, we explore the so-called Five to Revive. The Landmark Society always chooses five different buildings or parts of our community that need some revitalization, that have a lot of character but might be run down. What did they choose for 2016? We'll go down the list. Then Robin Laverne Wilson joins us second hour, the Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. Kat Schwarz, engineer. Let's grab 58614. This is music from the last rehearsal from the PSO. And David, you want to tell us a little bit about what we're going to be hearing underneath this? Or you can just bring it right in there, Kat.
Sure. This is a little snatch from the third symphony of the Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 6 that we're going to be here playing this evening.
Okay. We'll listen up full just for a few seconds. And there is something a little bit Miley Cyrusizing about taking, you know, little chunks of orchestral music and trying to understand them without context, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe the worst way to listen is in these short bursts. But we are limited in some ways, and so if you want the full context, you actually have to see the performance. But as we listen here, David, I do want to know how you make your programming choices. You know, RPO has to make its choices. Mm-hmm. Community orchestras have to make their choices. You know, do you consult with one another? Do you think about what we've done in the past? How do you do it?
We do all those things. And, in fact, we have a community of a council of the whole, really, an advisory committee of the whole orchestra is free to come and meet at least once a year with me and make suggestions. And we talk it through, usually at somebody's house, and have some cookies and coffee and a lively discussion about what we have played in the past, how we'd like to
please the audience with what we offer, and especially please our players, because that's a big part of what we do. So we have the happy situation of having lots of input from the players themselves, and then it's my happy job at the end to sort of put it all together.
Dan, do you find yourself lobbying for individual pieces or anything that stands out?
I've asked for a few, but I know that Dave has a large list of suggestions, and I also have the impression, confirmed, we've talked mm-hmm. about this, how he has a long view in mind. So he might not take a suggestion a particular year, but you might find it down the road a few mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. He's trying to craft an orchestra over and build up our skills over time, and it's been working. Yeah. But yeah, I'll suggest something, but you know, I know that it may not appear.
Well,
but
come on, let's air a grievance here. What's one piece? One piece that you really wanted to do that has not been done yet?
I'm not sure.
Oh, come on.
Well, what was interesting? One time, I suggested one, and he did program it, but it happened to be in the year I took off.
Timing is everything.
Perfect
everything.
Timing.
Yeah.
What was the suggestion? What was the piece?
It was.
Don't know.
Lincoln Portrait.
Oh, Lincoln Portrait. Oh,
yeah.
Great
mm-hmm.
piece.
Yeah, and I suggested it because that year was going to be the bicentennial of the birth of Lincoln.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Well, so there is some collaboration.
Hold
it doesn't
on.
Just all come down on high. Jonathan, how does it
sure.
come together for you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Brighton Symphony has a wonderful board of directors that meet, you know, once or twice a year. And we also have open planning meetings. And we'll discuss various pieces that people in the orchestra would like to do and the board members would like to do. When it comes to Brockport Symphony, you know, I really like to do a lot of innovative things. We have some unique interests, like the Erie Canal. We rehearse just several blocks from the Erie Canal. We have a special interest in American music, in a lot of thematic programs and interdisciplinary things. So I obviously am very interested in what the players enjoy, and I also like to share new things that I find very inspiring with them. When it comes to Greece, we're very fortunate to have the Great Greece Performing Arts Society for both the Greece Symphony Orchestra and the Greece Community Orchestra. And as an overarching board, they give us various insights and ideas. But so much of it, I want to do things that the players love. Because if you play music that people love, whether it be the performers, whether it be the audiences, you can inspire a whole new generation of musicians to say, I want to play music my entire life. I want to go to concerts, including the RPO. A lot of the RPO's audience comes from us and their education on music. And that's what really makes it so exciting.
Mm-hmm. Shade?
Well, where to even begin? I mean, I think as conductors, we're always thinking about programs, whether or not you're actually with a group or not. Oh, you hear this piece and go, wow, this would really go great with, you know, like wine and cheese. it's really easy to say, well, I would really love, as you know, for myself, I'd really love to play The Rite of Spring or something, you know, that you would, you know, you shouldn't be doing at this point. And I think, you know, as a conductor, we do think long term. Okay, well, yes, we really need to do Tchaikovsky 4 in the, you know, have that be in the diet. But for me, it's always been to pick music that is both engaging for the players and also for the audience. You know, if you pick something that the players are going to hate, you know, the audience can sense that they're not really enjoying it. So I love to program things that are not, you know, programmed very often, and mix that in with something that's really, you know, standard. But yeah, I'm always thinking of long term, and I love to ask people, you know, at the end of, you know, I do a summer orchestra that I put together 2 years ago, and I always say, what would you like to do next year? And I get things like Dance Macabre. And sometimes, you know, I do very much like to listen to them because they are doing, you know, they're coming to play. Why, you know, why should I be the only person to decide
sure.
what we can or cannot play?
You mentioned Tchaikovsky. Tchaikovsky is going to be performed tonight. Which Tchaikovsky tonight?
Number 6.
Number 6. Mm-hmm. Is that the last before he died?
2 weeks after that, he died.
Yeah, two weeks after that, yes. Mm-hmm. Poisoned.
Well, maybe.
There's a lot of debate.
I know. Yes, yes.
Tchaikovsky, the movie. Yeah.
Honest question about Tchaikovsky. I was talking to a friend last week about Tchaikovsky, who's sort of likes orchestral music, but isn't sort of in with both feet. And I said, Tchaikovsky is a great example of you've heard so much Tchaikovsky that you would know the music, but you don't know that it's Tchaikovsky. And I played a few examples, but then I got to thinking, there's also so much great Tchaikovsky that isn't full orchestral violin concertos. Mm-hmm. Does the public want, you know, the symphonies, or does the public want a diversity?
I think different people want different things, you know. And again, we're in a happy situation here in Rochester where we can hear a lot of unusual music that isn't played or in concert very often, sometimes on WXXI FM. Mm-hmm. I mean, the programming is fabulous for its diversity.
You know, yes.
So that's
yes.
part of it. That's yes. part of the whole soup that makes up this this wonderful... this wonderful situation that we have in Rochester. So I think some people would like to hear more chamber pieces, and there are other groups in town that do that sort of thing. There's a group called Cordancia that really does unusual programming, sometimes by major composers, of pieces that you wouldn't hear the RPO or the PSO mm-hmm. do. So there's that sort of opportunity. I think if people want to hear that sort of thing, it's available to them.
Absolutely. Guys, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I mean, Rochester has a really wonderful chamber music scene as well. So if you don't want to go... you know, see an hour-long Mahler symphony or something like that, you can go see something equally exhausting in, you know, Beethoven 131.
Exhausting in a good way.
Yeah, emotionally exhausting or, right. you know, satisfying or whatever. My former cello teacher and her quartet just last year did the complete Beethoven quartets, which was... some quartets are really crazy and they do it all in something like 5 concerts, and they did it over the year. And I mean, they're not just because I, you know, she was my teacher, but they were some of the most incredible music experiences I've heard. So I think there's, you know, the wonderful thing, as some of our callers said and my colleagues here, is that there's so much around that if you wake up and you feel, you know, in the mood for jazz or avant-garde, whatever, you can find it here.
Let me grab Sam in Rochester on the phone. But Sam, before I do, I want to read an email from a listener named Jen, who writes, "Hi Evan, my husband and I are both transplants to the Rochester area. We've been here for about 15 years. In that time, both of our families have moved to the south, and the gravitational pull for us to leave the area is huge. No snow, they say. Everything is new, they say. The people are so nice, they say. But I say, do they have so many community music groups that it is impossible to both play an instrument yourself and see everything you want to see? Do they have a world-class music school putting on hundreds of free concerts a year? Is there an internationally known jazz festival? I cannot tell you how many times I've had a rehearsal on a night that there are 2 or 3 musical events that I would like to see occurring simultaneously. Where else can you get that with affordable housing costs and great school districts to boot? The Rochester art scene warms my heart enough to keep shoveling snow for many years to come." Thanks for today's Beautiful. Show, and tell everyone to go out and see a community orchestra show Absolutely. Tonight. That's from Jen. Wow, Jen, that is a great email.
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Smiles
Powerful.
On the face of...
Thank you so
yeah.
much.
Yeah,
go
smiles
see the Penfield
everyone
tonight.
Well, that,
Penfield
you can.
Tonight.
Yeah. They're actually playing tonight.
Go see David in action.
Now, speaking of where we've got community orchestras, Sam in Rochester wants to weigh in. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you, Evan, for taking my call.
Sure.
I haven't been to a symphony in quite a while. They used to give tickets away at East High School for individuals in the city to come and listen to symphonies. But I heard you were talking about having symphonies in Brighton and East Rochester and Fairport, but I didn't hear you mention in the inner city. Is there one in the inner city for the inner city, like African-Americans or... Hispanic groups, or if not, have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, Sam, it is a great question, and I think it is a vital question for the future of orchestral music because, you know, David will tell you, classical music is not dying right now. That's been overwrought, but certainly we don't want it to be only old, rich, and white.
Absolutely.
And so I'm going to let them kind of answer your question, Sam. I do want to make sure that we mention that there are some kids programs, especially there's some really good people doing some work trying to get an opportunity to kids in more impoverished areas and providing opportunities. But I'll kind of go around the table and let them answer that. David, you want to
start? Strings for Success at School 19 pops up immediately, and that's a targeted program for young potential string students right in that area that Patty Armel has been in charge of, and that's shown great growth. The Eastman School has an outreach program to the inner city that's also making great strides. My firm belief about this is if once people experience classical music, even as listeners, or especially as people who have tried to play it, you know, it gets you sometimes. It gets you immediately. And that's one of the reasons that, if the gentleman who called wants to come tonight, he can be our guest. You can go to penfieldsymphony.org, be my guest, fill out the form and show up, and we'll happily welcome you this evening. We offer free tickets for students, and that's all the way through college. So if students want to come, high school, younger folks, college people, show up this evening, you'll be our guest.
That's great. Yeah. Anyone else want to weigh in on how to answer his question, on how to make sure it's more accessible?
I'd just like to say thank you so much for that question, because I really believe all of our orchestras have very diverse membership in everything from, you know, high school students all the way through senior citizens. And one of the things in our case, we have a lot of free concerts. Brighton Symphony performs often on the edge of Brighton and the city of Rochester, very close for people to come. Brockport also has a very varied population. We have a lot of colleges in this area, and we really do try to engage everyone. Anyone from the city of Rochester can go to a concert right within its borders, and you can get often a free concert. I mean, David's absolutely right. The Eastman puts on tremendous amounts of concerts, and I'd just love to see even more of a growth of music across our community, because everyone deserves to have a chance to participate in the exciting work that we do.
And Megan Mack is telling me, yes, my memory is correct. It's Rock Music that does some work for kids, and we've talked about that a bit on this program, Sam. It's definitely worth checking out. But I think everybody agrees that it can be sort of, I don't say prohibitive. It's not prohibitive to play music, but sometimes string instruments, different instruments can be expensive. And if you don't have people stepping up to donate and make sure kids of all backgrounds can get their hands on them, that's a challenge. And it's not just in urban areas. There's plenty of impoverished districts or a growing level of poverty in suburban and really in rural areas. You're from Ovid, which is down in the Finger Lakes.
Yep.
There's plenty of poverty down there. You said there's not really a music program. Shade,
well,
right?
There is a music program, a very good one, just not a, you know, strings are very expensive, like you
absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
You have a choice of buying one or renting one. And they're also very, you know, well, every instrument is very difficult to teach. Strings are very difficult to teach. So, you know, that's generally the first thing to go or the first thing not to have.
Yeah.
So one of my goals being with the Genesee Symphony, and I started a music group, an orchestra made up of volunteers, professional, non-professional, you name it. And we do usually two concerts a summer in my hometown, and we do it for charity. So last year we did the Avon Breast Cancer Crusade, and the year before the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. So that's my way of kind of trying, because it's such a beautiful area there, and I was very lucky to have a family that introduced me to music when I was 2 or 3 years old and haven't stopped since. So this is my way of trying to continue.
That's great. And before we run out of time, two quick questions here. Before we go, they're all going to tell you the next time you can actually see their performances, starting with just a few hours from now. But before we do that, I do want to ask them briefly, all the panelists here, in general, do you feel like audiences are demanding any shorter concerts or any change in how orchestral music is presented, or is that just sort of a trope that gets trotted out with these classical music is dying? David?
If you consider how classical music is accessible now, consider the web. I mean, there's a tremendous, more people on the planet are probably experiencing classical music now than they ever have in the history of mankind. And you can tell not only in the United States, but also in Europe, that people are going to concerts more. I think maybe attention span in general is a larger issue, and we all have our iPhones out, and that sort of thing defines to some extent what we can deal with. But in general, it does require an investment of concentration and time and a sort of suspension of cultural reality. So put away your iPhones and come, and I think a lot of people do.
I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
And that isn't meant to be condescending. It's good for me, too. I mean, I'm somebody who's ripped the phone out of my hand and force it. That's a very good thing. How do you guys feel?
I mean, I think also just the way we, no pun intended, conduct ourselves at concerts. We're used to, you know, you go to a professional concert, everyone sits in a dark room and they don't move and they don't cough, and some guy walks out and everyone bows and claps. And what I, as much as I do not like talking in public when in front of a million people, it's very helpful, I think, to, you know, to break that wall and to engage them and not feel like we're, you know, talking down to them, or this is something that...
Or if you somehow misbehave for one moment...
Then yeah, get out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I try very hard to, you know, if it's tell them a little bit about the piece or the soloist, so they can really connect to what we're doing, and it's not just some alien thing.
That's great.
I think what we do is very exciting. But, you know, I have to say, we have to hear the audience voices. You know, for so many years, I've seen professional concerts with players sitting there not always having the most emotion. And I've seen concerts that program long, long works with people that say, why can't we do something else? In Rochester, you can get anything. If you want more of a theme program, you can get it from one of the orchestras. If you want to hear a big symphonic masterpiece, we have that. If you want to play any of these, we have that. But we have to hear the audience's voices. And as a community, I think we have to do a better job of listening to each other. And this is where community orchestras really sparkle. And I'm so proud of our efforts. And on the national scene, everyone admires the work we do. And I'm so excited to see a bright and wonderful future,
right,
not only for classical music, but orchestral
music. We're down to about 50 seconds. So your next performances, got to be quick here. What can we see, Jonathan?
Absolutely. Greece Symphony Orchestra, October 30th, 3 p.m., Bethany Presbyterian Church. Brighton Symphony Orchestra, Sunday, November 6th, 3 p.m., Baptist Temple Sanctuary. Brockport Symphony Orchestra, Holiday Pops Concert. Saturday, December 3rd, 4 p.m., St. Luke's Episcopal Church. And the Greece Community Orchestra at the Mall at Greece Ridge, Monday, December 19th, 7:30 p.m., the Mall at Greece Ridge. Look them up online. We'll look forward to seeing you there.
Shade.
This Sunday, the 30th, at 3 o'clock, the Finger Lakes Symphony. I'm a guest conductor. We're doing Howard Hanson's Second Symphony, local legend.
Very good.
Great. And then the next GSO concert is Sunday, December 11th at 4 o'clock p.m. It's our annual holiday concert.
And you ready for this? Tonight, Penfield.
7:30, Penfield High School.
Be
Tchaikovsky,
there.
Prokofiev, and Primrou.
That's tonight, 7:30. You can get tickets right at the door. Enjoy it tonight, and I want to thank all of you for being here. David and Dan from Penfield, thank you so much for sharing your time and telling your stories here. Jonathan and Shade, continued good luck and success to all the work that you guys are doing. And for everyone who plays, you know, I think they made such a great point this hour for the people who don't get paid but want to do it and do it in a way that enriches our community culturally, musically. Thank you for what you do. Thanks to all the community orchestras. Kat Schwartz, nice to see you engineering the broadcast today. Nice working with you. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk with you Tuesday on member-supported public radio.